at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, guys, we are back. Second hour of the KMOX Home Improvement Show. I'm Rich Orris, like he said, and we've got a full another hour here for everybody. Whatever you need, whatever help, question, thought, comment, concern you have around your house, I'm right here for you. And I want to welcome in the 97.1 FM listeners to this. So, guys, same phone number, same thought. You can call in. Get your home improvement, maintenance, whatever you need, questions answered right here today with me, 314-436-7900. No matter where you're listening from, that number will get you right to me, and we can get you in. Phone lines are wide open here, and plenty of time. So in the past hour, we had a few good conversations and questions. I want to thank Sue, Betty, and Dorothy for calling in and talking about their questions, comments, and concerns. But we also went over, we did a lot with the Fire Safety Week, awareness of smoke detectors, awareness of making a plan. And actually, Betty called in, and when she called in, she was talking about training your pets to go to the door, go to a door. When the smoke alarms go off, what a great thing to train your pets for. Because if it did and you trained them to go to the front door, but maybe you climbed out a window, you can run around and open that door and they can come out and get with you. So what a great thought that is, for sure. And I did have one last little story on the fire safety, and it's really kind of a crazy thing, but it's definitely something to think about and just be sensible with what you're doing and be careful with what you're doing around the house. It's great to read and understand your barbecue grills, your smokers, everything that could potentially bring a hazard. Make sure you're following how far away from the house it should be, and have fire extinguishers around the house. But this particular person, it was a story in the paper. So this is straight out of the Washington Post. So that's my source. I'm not spreading anything crazy, but it is a crazy, crazy story that this homeowner in Maryland tried to use smoke to battle snakes that were infested inside his house. So this Maryland homeowner, attempting to rid his house of a snake infestation, so he accidentally burns his house down. It was in November of 2021, and so this person set a bunch of sequence of little small fires in metal containers in their basement, and was hoping that the smoke would drive away the snakes. So, and snakes, they basically say they are sensitive to smell, and experts have kind of noted that with the cold weather, it made the snakes kind of sluggish, less responsive to smoke maybe. But unfortunately, this fire spreads, it destroys an entire house valued at $1 million. So it took 75 firefighters were needed to extinguish the blaze. No humans were hurt. They're not sure about the snakes, but they did. They only found one snake, and it was found alive. So really didn't work for him at all with the smoke or the fire. But, you know, you get to that, and of course, myself and all the experts out there are going to advise against using smoke for snake removal and recommend professionals instead, obviously. And so just consider and think about and be sensible with what you're doing around your house. We talk every week about remodeling it and the importance of maintenance and keeping up with it and doing all this, but just be careful and just really think about every little thing that you're going to do to just try and make sure that it doesn't have some sort of catastrophic problem like that particular one. I've often wondered when I've the first time I talked about this story and even now, like how his homeowner's insurance even handled that. I guess that's still like an accidental fire. I don't know. That's up for question, and I don't have any information on that whatsoever. And I can tell you that I have been a part of trying to battle snakes in a home that, because once they're in there, they find a spot and they can get around. And of course, when they breed, they're very, very small, so they can come in through little small cracks and stuff. So years ago, I had a condo, kind of like a townhouse, that had snakes in it. And we went around and tried to seal up some stuff from the inside and tried to think about all these different areas where snakes could make their way from outside, underneath the basement concrete floor, through the foundation, all that, and in to the home. So we did a lot of different things to try and help battle that. And we weren't alone. She had, I believe it was Rottler, working also from the outside. But the hard part for them was this was a multi-family building, so generally they'll go around your house and they'll try and find how they're getting in or where they might be getting in and close that up from the outside, because snakes are opportunists. They look for places to go. They don't create places to go. So when your ground sinks and there's an area underneath your front porch, they'll then find that. They'll get to it. And they'll start breeding under there, but they don't dig like a rabbit or an animal that creates their own kind of area home to be in, or moles or voles, things like that. So that's very hard to do on a building that has six units or so on it, and it could be basically coming from the neighbor and then into yours, because the basement floor is kind of one big basement floor running between them, and everything's connected so they can get around underneath the foundation walls and footings and all of that. So yeah, it's definitely a hard thing, and that's why we were also called in to kind of look at the inside and see if there's ways we could kind of keep these from getting into the interior living space from there. So it was quite the challenge. We did our best, and hopefully it ended up working out well enough in the end for her. But we're going to take our first quick break. Tom, if you could hold on through a quick short break, we'll get to that, and then we will get to Tom's phone call and anybody else's phone call that you may have. Any questions, 314-436-7900 finds me. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, we're back. Hey, remember, don't be shy. Whatever you need, I'm right here for you. Anything about your house, 314-436-7900 finds me. We've got Tom on the line. Thanks for holding through the break. Tom, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. So my question is, it's kind of a crazy one. So I was using like my paper. I have a, eat-in kitchen. And I have a paper shredder in on one side of there. So I was shredding some paper, and on another one of my outlets, we have a floor fan. It's plugged in, but it's not on. Don't have it turned on. Whenever I was running my paper shredder, like right at the end, the fan blade starts turning on our floor fan. And it's not in the on position. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. So it does lead me to believe, one, that those outlets are in a sequence, you know, in the same sequence with one another. And somehow, yeah, there must have been like some kind of arcing, or when that shredder's going, it's drawing a lot of power with that motor. As it's pulling the paper through, there's probably a lot of arc and stuff with that. So I a lot of outlets, and this, you said this is in the kitchen, right?
Yeah, it's in our eat-in kitchen. So, you know, it's got multiple outlets in there, and they're on separate ones. Like, one's on one side of the room, and then one's, like, in the middle of it. So I know they're, I'm assuming they're pretty much running off each other.
And they should
tie them together.
Probably be GFCI protected, but not maybe necessarily arc fault protected. But I can't even positively say if that would even do it. Did it? How much did it turn? I mean, because the only other possibility is wind. Is if there was a breeze, if someone like air movement, if someone shut a door down the hall and just a little bit of air pressure, and maybe it had nothing to do with the power per se.
So, and I thought that, and I even thought vibration, you know, from the, you know,
just
everything
it moving, and yeah,
it's weird because it moves right at the end of the cycle, and I think it's probably when those amps are up the highest.
Yeah,
that it's, but what amazes me is it's not even on. So how, you know, I mean, the power button has not been pushed, and I just couldn't understand how they could still feed power in past that switch.
Yeah, I honestly don't know either. And so you've seen this more than once, and you've kind of noticed like when in the shredding system that it's happening?
Well, pretty much, I thought my wife was crazy whenever she told me one time, probably a year ago, that the fan moved on its own, and I never saw it move on its own.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then all of a sudden, the one day, you know, the other day, she goes, see, it moved. I'm like, what are you talking about moved? So fan blade moved.
Yeah,
and
so
then I messed with the shredder, and sure enough, it did right at the end. And it very small amount, very slight amount, but it was starting to move, and probably about not even a quarter turn.
Yeah. And yeah, so I would definitely guess that the amount of, because the outlet will have power, so there's power going through the cord to the switch at the fan. And that power is probably, when you're running that shredder, that power's kind of fluctuating how much it's getting. And then something with the fan, the on-off switch, is just letting some of that power slightly get through it, or it's jumping a little bit to that, you know, not in the off position. It's jumping power in a space, maybe even. So I would probably think it's something with the fan, the switch in the fan, and I would start with a new fan.
Yeah, and I thought that too.
Yeah.
I thought that too. And I, matter of fact, I have the same type fan downstairs, and I brought that up, and I put it in, and that one moved too, but not as much as the other one did.
Oh,
the older one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it could be, I don't know if it's that fan. And, you know, you're talking about surge protection. Where these plugs are at, I don't think they're tied into that because they're not on that back wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not positive, but I don't think those are because they're not around the sinks or anything.
Yeah, but that surge fluctuating because of that is definitely probably something to do with that on-off switch on that fan. And I would have to guess, like, a newer fan, a different fan may not do that.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I was just wondering, you know.
Yep.
Just something to throw out there.
Yeah, no, very, very interesting. And there are so many weird things like that that happen in our homes and with all these different devices and just utilities and things that we have and the appliances that we have in our kitchen and all of that. And that electric can kind of kick hand in hand with other ones. And that's also why now today the codes have changed so much to getting so many things on dedicated circuits where the kitchen countertop outlets are on a dedicated circuit and the outside outlets are on a dedicated where they used to be hooked in with the kitchen and the bathrooms. And so now each bathroom is a dedicated circuit because you would get people say, yep, I kick on my hair dryer on my master bath and it trips an outlet in another room or this doesn't work in the other bathroom when I do that. And so the separation, they're separating that stuff. And now we've got panel boxes that have 40 and 60 spaces to spread out and separate all these outlets and all the power going to all the different places specifically because of issues like this going on for everybody and weird electrical things happening and too much power and power surges and having too much on one circuit. And so, yeah, they've really been changing that code in the past 20, 30 years. Now it's almost everything's dedicated in every different area just to minimize all those sorts of issues and weird things going on for everybody. But hey, I think we're going to take let's get into our middle hour break here. And again, for everybody out there, we got a whole nother half hour for you. So feel free to call me, find me, ask me anything you got going on around the house. 314-436-7900. We'll have plenty more to come after this. We'll be right back.
The Voice of St. Louis, News Radio 1120, KMOX.
All right, guys, we are back. We got plenty of time for everybody. You can find me once again, 314-436-7900. And Sharon has done exactly that and found me. So let's get to the phones. Sharon, are you there? What do you got going on?
Yes. Okay. I have an electrical issue. I heard you just talking to the last caller, and I thought, oh, perfect. I'm going to call and ask my question.
Okay.
I have a living room light and a fan that's, you know, overhead. It's on the same circuit as a light switch. If I plug in my cell phone charger in that outlet, after a while, I'll notice the living room light goes out. The fan and the light will, you know, it'll go off completely. And I unplug my cell phone charger and the light comes back on. My question, I'm thinking that outlet is bad and it just needs to be replaced. Well, I haven't had a chance to do that yet. So I've been flipping the breaker off when I leave the house because I just don't want there to be any kind of electrical issue. Could there possibly be an electrical issue because something's bad like that? Or would it flip the breaker?
Well, so how old is your home?
It is built in 1993.
1993, okay. So, I mean, there can definitely be an electrical issue. And the biggest reason I say that is because, and I don't know exactly when some of these codes came into place and when things got kind of changed up on how they did it, but I believe 93 should be pretty close to, it should be that way, where most of your electrical outlets and your lights are on different circuits. So
a lot of them are, yes. I have several different breakers down in the basement.
So that kind of leads me to believe that somebody might have added something or changed something. Have you lived in the house since it was built?
I'm the only owner.
Okay, you're the only owner, so it was definitely something from original or the builder. So, and the breaker, if something's going on, breakers do fail sometimes. So,
and my son already replaced the breaker itself, the individual breaker, and that didn't fix it.
Yep.
And another thing that's funny is, like, when my grandkids were here, like, we slammed the door, not on purpose, but, like, we were just slamming the door for another reason, and the light would flicker with just the door being slammed down the hallway away from the living room about, you know, 20 feet.
Yeah, that, and that kind of sounds like a loose connection on the switch or in the lights. The wire to the fixture, somewhere in there is probably a loose connection. And I get what you're saying, because I do the same thing all the time where I'm kind of closing the door with my foot because I'm coming in with something in my hands, and it's kind of a slam. It's not really, but it is. And yeah, so that, I would say you might have some something loose going on with the outlet in your phone and the other lights. You could try changing that outlet. That's an easy next step, to rewire, get a brand new outlet put in. If it does it after you change that outlet, I would get a licensed electrician in there to start investigating what's going on with that and with the other flicker, because loose connections are where things spark and arc, and that's where fires start. Is on loose connections with electrical. So
my question is, is there a loose connection? There was something going on like that. Wouldn't it flip the breaker? Isn't that what the purpose of that breaker's for, though?
Well, I mean, it
not always.
It won't always. It should, but there's older breakers and breaker boxes that have a lot of issues that have high fail rates that we. When we find these breaker systems, we need to change them out. That's not yours because you're from 93, but breakers and those systems, they are only so effective, and they do have a fail rate. Now, they should be like 99.7 or something percent effective, but it still means that 0.3 could not be effective. And so...
And that's why I don't want to...
Yeah.
We'll flip that breaker off. So,
yep. I would definitely recommend.
Change that outlet, because the other outlets that when my son was in town, we changed some other outlets, and the wires were, they didn't leave a lot of extra wire to hook up the outlet.
Yeah.
So it was real tight. So it definitely could be a bad connection
here. Yep. It could. Yep. I would start with that, and then immediately. And on the other one, the switch, the hall lights, you can take the switch, make sure everything's tightened and there's no loose connections. Take the fixtures down, make sure there's no loose connections. But I would, and then if it still does it, I'd definitely get an electrician.
Okay, I'll do that. I appreciate your show. I appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you calling in, Sharon. Great question and interesting thing for sure. But let's jump over to John and see what's going on with John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, John?
I'm living somebody's dream.
Yeah, yeah. It should be yours.
Well, maybe. Maybe people
saw. So you can live my dream with me for a few minutes here. How's that?
I'd love to. Thank you. So, in new water heater installed, gas water heater. Only the hot water side, and only for the first few minutes, it runs. Not, I don't know how to describe it. Dirty, murky, sedimentary kind of. Called the installer. They came back out, put in the new water heaters. You know, same 40-gallon water heater, gas. Same things happening. And now they're mad at me. They don't want to believe that I'm having the problem.
Oh, wow.
Any suggestions?
Boy, how old is the house?
Early 90s, maybe 89, 90, right in there somewhere.
Okay, so you should have copper and all of that in your pipes and everything. Because, I mean, the only other thing would be if it's something around the pipes, the fittings, that is, it's kind of due to the change of the water heater, but not due from the water heater itself. And so that's kind of why you're still seeing it, and it's trying to, like, it loosened up and it's flushing this stuff out. But I don't know that that would be necessarily, I'd be more concerned with that if it was a much older house, and maybe checking the lines between the water heater and the fixture itself. So you could try and just flush the water heater out and see if it changes it at all. And then if it does or restarts afterwards, then you know it's probably definitely something with the water heater, because maybe it's a defect in the brand and something that I haven't seen or heard a lot of this one with water heaters going in, though, with new ones. But that would probably be the step that I would try, is to and look at what's coming out of that water heater, too. I would flush that water heater out. And there, you can find online, too, just kind of like a guideline to shut off the gas, do all that, kind of hook up a hose to the drain at the bottom of the water heater, and just flush that whole thing out, run some cold water through it, flush it out. I would look at that water, put that water in a bucket if you can, and see what's coming out, or filter it, and then kind of restart and see if it still happens.
Okay. That sounds like a plan. I mean, it's better. I mean, at least it might be an answer, whereas I haven't got any other answers. So what the heck?
I would start with that, see what happens, and then if it, because it might kind of clear it up, and then you, if you start to see it again, you're like, okay, there is something going on. More investigation with the plumbers.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks, John.
You have a great day. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, you're welcome. You too. You have a great day too. So, that's something I'll have to kind of look at, and maybe we can schedule next week or the week after, we could talk again about flushing out the hot water heaters and exactly all the steps and how to do it. I have had conversations a lot in the past about that, and it is something that the people waver on: should you flush out your water heater or should you not? And basically, I think the consensus I've heard the most is, it's a good thing to do if you do it. And if you, like John just got his new water heater, so if you flush that water heater like once a year, it would be good maintenance and help keep it clean and get out any deposits and calcium deposits and stuff. And then I think the main consensus on top of that is, if you've had a water heater for 3, 4, 5 or more years, 10 years, then maybe don't start doing that flushing out and everything until you get your next water heater and start from scratch. Because I have had some people and some plumbers that I've discussed with and interviewed and stuff saying, well, once you get so much, flushing it out could start to cause more problems than it could resolve if you haven't done it in 10 years, and all of a sudden you want to start doing it. So start doing it. Good advice for John would be, do that once a year and just flush that out and clean it out and fill it back up and let it heat back up. And you can get all that stuff out of there once a year and kind of help. It should help the life expectancy and maybe make that water heater last a little bit longer. Those things don't last quite like they used to. It's kind of amazing, the shorter and shorter lifespans, but those water heaters are 10, 12, 15 years, and definitely you get to 15, I would start considering your next water heater, what you're going to want and what you're going to select and everything, because you'll get close to needing it at that point without a doubt. So we're going to get into our final break here. We will have time for anybody's questions, comments, or concerns in the final segment. 314-436-7900 gets you there. And don't touch that dial. We'll have more to come after this.
Now, back to the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, we're back. Final segment of the Home Improvement Show. Do you have something going on? We've got a couple minutes to get you in. 314-436-7900. But I think what I'll do for now, I've had this on my list for quite a few weeks here. A little bit of history with the home improvement innovation. So I know you've all probably heard Sue Thomas host History of the Loo. It airs right after the Home Improvement Show. So I'm going to maybe steal her thunder just a little bit when it comes to the history as it pertains to home improvement innovations. But we all know the 1904 World's Fair brought us the hot dog, the ice cream cone, iced tea, and I just found out it brought us Dr. Pepper, which is a really cool thing. I didn't realize that was on the list also. But one of the things that it also brought us was the first public building using air conditioning. So they built this building. It was called the Missouri State Building. And it was they built it for the fair, and they used a mechanical refrigeration to cool that building. It was 35,000 cubic feet of air per minute to cool this 1,000-seat auditorium that they had built. And it marked the first time the American public was exposed to the concept of comfort cooling, air conditioning. Now, a sad fact to that building was it was built in June, and apparently in November, it had an explosion from, I think it said, a water heater explosion, and it destroyed the building. And we have talked about water heaters and boiler tanks and under pressure, and they do and can have bad enough issues to explode like that. So some different interesting facts with all of this is that, so in general, right now, 48% of all of our energy consumption in American homes is a direct result of cooling and heating in the home. So after that Missouri State Building was built and then so sadly exploded, the biggest use of the air conditioning was movie theaters. They were the first to really bring in that technology for their spaces. Some earlier refrigerants that they used very, very early on, way back then, were extremely bad for us and even deadly. Ammonia and sulfur dioxide, they had all this, how they made it work was really with some bad chemicals. So the first domestic air conditioning system that was installed in Minneapolis was in 1914, and of course the name that did it was Charles Gilbert Gates, that was a big giant unit that was 7 foot high, 6 foot wide, and like 20 feet long. These things were massive, and then the Packard, so the car, the first car manufactured, offered air conditioning in 1939. Their 1940 model year cars had air conditioning in them. And then, of course, Willis Carrier designed the first modern air conditioning system in 1902. In July, there was the smaller modern ones. So we all recognize the name Carrier, of course. So that lasted a super long time. So when we look at air conditioning, and what we do and how it works. So basically, it is interesting how it works because we do not make cold air. We actually remove heat and then things become cold. So there's a compressor, an expansion valve, there's a hot coil on the outside and a chilled coil on the inside, there's a fan inside and out, and so we're removing heat to create this cold. So as that refrigerant enters the compressor as low pressure gas, then it's compressed to a high pressure. When that high pressure gas flows through the condensing coil, that's where it condenses into a liquid and it releases the heat to the outside air. So when you go outside and the fan's blowing on that unit outside and it's always really hot blowing out of there, that's what's happening. We're taking the heat out of it. And then the fan on the inside, as that liquid refrigerant moves through the expansion valve, and then the evaporator coil, that's where the fan on the inside runs past all that, and it's blowing that cold air through your house. So it's kind of interesting how we don't actually produce cold air. We just remove heat from what we need. And there's now, I was talking about the actual systems that they used and the fuels that they used to make this. Well, they're changing that again in our system. So they're changing the type of refrigerants that we can use to make this happen. So in 2025, there's going to be another change. We're going to have, unfortunately, coming up another price increase on how much these units cost and getting them changed. And so there's a lot of people recommending, if you're thinking about an air conditioner, doing it right away this year to get ahead of that change, because I don't know how much it's going to change, but there's rumors that anywhere from 10 to possibly 25% increase in new air conditioners in 2025 and beyond with this new refrigerant that we're going to be using. So we'll still be able to get the old one. So if you do change it, that's going to be around for as long as you need. We can still get all the old ones now if you still have it. So that will be there. So don't worry about if you can or can't get that and how that works. So another interesting thing is, if we all remember the heat pump, remember the commercial from Laclede Glass way years back with old Vern in the commercial, heat pump, schmeat pump, he'd say. And that whole thing was just kind of Laclede Gas way of saying they want to stay inside your house, and they're just trying to kind of put out some things about electric heat, that it, you know, gas is better and all of this. But the electric heat, the heat pumps, they are some really good systems that can work really, really well when installed and maintained and performed right. So hopefully this was just a little cool thing about the history of when we started all this and how it began in St. Louis. I think it's really cool that it started here. So maybe Sue Thomas will cover some of this and talk about that Missouri building sometime, because that's another interesting little thing of what happened with that and everything. So there's some cool stuff going on in St. Louis, and obviously you can hear a lot about that from the next show with her after this. So we're good. We're done. Hey, be good. Be good to each other. Be good to your homes. And I will talk to everybody next week.